Up next, one of the most incredible reincarnation cases in a long, long time. Could a little boy be proof of reincarnation? Carol, the incredible case of the little boy, 6 years old then. He's got to be about, what, nine now, maybe?
He's turning 10 this week.
Oh, he is. Okay. How did you find out about the case, or how did they find out about you?
In 2001, I got an email from Andrea Leininger because her son, James, who was about almost three at that point, had been having nightmares about three or four times a week, about his airplane crashing. He would wake up screaming and say things like, "Airplane on fire, I can't get out." And this was really disrupting their lives quite a bit.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
And Andrea mentioned it to her mother, and her mother said, "Well, perhaps this is a past life memory." And she sent her my first book, Children's Past Lives. And I just pulled out the email, the original email, and she said, from a very early age, you know, as soon as James could make his desires known, all he wanted were toy airplanes, and he could identify them. In fact, she bought him a toy airplane, and she said, "Oh, look, there's a little bomb underneath it." And he said, "No, Mommy, that's a drop tank." She had no idea what that was. Apparently, that's something under a plane. And after she got the book, she saw that sometimes children have nightmares relating to past lives, and she started using some of the techniques I describe in the book. And she encouraged him to talk, you know, "Well, what's happening?" You know, as he was talking about the nightmare, "What's happening? What's happening?" He said, "Little man can't get out of the plane." And she said, "What kind of plane do you fly?" And he said, "A Corsair." And she and Bruce, the father, had never heard of a Corsair. And it turns out that it was a type of plane used in World War II from aircraft carriers. So after she allowed him to talk about it and kind of acknowledged, "Yes, it's okay, you know, you're safe now, whatever happened is over," he started talking about being a pilot. And he would start talking about his plane and how he flew a Corsair. And this is like a 2.5-year-old, and he was consistent with this, and he was obsessed with these airplanes. And Andrea, who was open to reincarnation, would question him, "Well, you know, what kind of plane did you fly, and where did your plane take off?" And he said, "Off a boat." And she said, "Do you remember the name of your boat?" And he said, "Yeah, the Natoma."
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so at this point, this is when they contacted me, and she put in her email, "You know, we're not nuts or crackpots, you know, we're normal people. My husband is VP for an oil company." And you know, at that point, I had gotten maybe hundreds of emails because this was a few years after my first book came out. So I kind of filed it away and thought, "Well, that's interesting, but nothing verifiable yet." And what was interesting was Bruce, the father, was pretty devout Christian, and he didn't want to believe that this was even possible, that his son could have a past life memory. So he started doing research. And he found there was an aircraft carrier in the Pacific called the Natoma Bay. And as James was more forthcoming with his memories, Andrea would say, "Well, do you remember your name?" And he would always say, "James." So, you know,
she thought it was the same, right?
Well, she didn't know. She thought, "Well, okay, well, maybe this is, you know, not what we think." But Bruce would kind of chalk it up on his side. "See,
yeah."
You know. But then she asked him, "Do you remember anybody else?" And he goes, "Yeah, Jack Larson." And Bruce,
you mentioned the guy's last name?
Yeah.
Jeez.
This is not his last name, but his friend's last name. And Bruce was doing research, he found that there was a list of the people on the Natoma Bay, and there was a Jack Larson. So I think, you know, Bruce was getting a little weirded out at this point. And he actually went to a reunion of the Natoma Bay survivors. He didn't want to say what was going on, but he talked to a number of people, and he said, well, was there anyone, you know, on your aircraft carrier who died? And he described how James described dying in the plane. The plane went in the water, and the engine was on fire. And finally, he found someone who was flying on that mission who said, yeah, there was one person who died in that way, and his name was James Houston. So still at this point, Bruce didn't want to believe it.
But he's now at a point, I bet, where he's saying, this is too weird.
Yeah, well, Andrea was already, you know.
Yeah.
She was on to it. And he would come out with just very detailed memories about his family life as James Houston. And they found out that James Houston died in 1945 on his, it was supposed to be his last mission near Iwo Jima.
Wow. 21-year-old, right?
Right, 21 years old, which is kind of hard to imagine now. And what really tipped the scales for Bruce was he got a book on World War II and was leafing through it, and James, who was probably about four at this point, was looking over his shoulder, and there was an aerial view of Iwo Jima, and he said, Daddy, that's where my plane went down. And that's when I think Bruce lost it. You know, he said,
yeah.
You know, he just, something inside of him clicked, and, you know, he couldn't explain it any other way. And in 2002, I got a call from one of the producers for 2020, ABC's 2020, and a lovely woman of Indian descent, and she wanted to do a show on children's past lives because this was part of her culture, and she wanted to expose Americans to these cases because she thought they were so compelling. So I was looking through my files, and I found Andrea's email, and I called her to see if there were any updates. And, you know, the case was evolving constantly because after she talked to little James, his nightmares diminished from like three or four times a week to once every 2 weeks and then just stopped.
He calmed down.
Yep. And he just needed to release that. And that's when he became more forthcoming with his detailed memories. And he would say things like, well, when I used to fly my plane, it always used to get flat tires. So Bruce would do research, and he got some very thick book from the Navy on the Corsair, and one of the design defects was every time the Corsair landed on an aircraft carrier, it would get a flat tire.
And not a lot of people knew that, so it's not something that little James could
exactly.
pick up.
It was like on page 400 of an 800-page book, you know?
Yeah, a complicated 800-page book.
Yeah, right. But Bruce is a very smart guy. He has an MBA from Columbia. You know, he's really well-educated and knows how to do research. So one of the things, well, as we started developing the TV show, they did one taping, and they decided not to use it. And they waited a year and decided to resurrect the project. And in that year, Bruce discovered a lot. He discovered James Houston's identity. He met some of the survivors in the Natoma Bay who were very open to his story once he let the cat out of the bag. And he found that James Houston had a surviving sister who was in her 80s who lived in California. And Andrea contacted her. And it must have been very shocking for her. You know, I said, look, if they're going to put this on TV, you have to call her and tell her what's going on because she could have a heart attack if she saw this on TV.
Yeah.
So Andrea did. And James Houston's sister, Anne Barron, was absolutely lovely. And she said, you know, little James knew details of the family life. Knew the name of an older sister. It was not, I can't remember the name. It was something like Bertha, you know, not a common name. And James knew that their father had been hit by a car and was in the hospital. He remembered little, you know, very mundane details of their life. There's just no way in the world anyone could know. So he had the nightmares of the death. He knew very specific details of this person's life. And, you know, he had this inordinate interest in airplanes. You know, he was kind of obsessed by his death. You know, he left unfinished. That's what it was. So, actually, Anne Barron sent the Leininger's photos of her brother, and there's one of him standing in front of his Corsair.
Gee.
Yeah, it was like a Twilight Zone episode.
Did he look like the little boy a little bit?
Similar, yes. There's definitely a similarity. And what was really interesting, when we did the second taping for ABC, ABC Primetime picked it up after 2020, didn't want to do it. And they changed the interviewer to Chris Cuomo,
mm-hmm.
who was very tough. He's a lawyer by training. So, you know, he was very skeptical. When he interviewed me in New York, before he met the Leiningers, he was grilling me. And it was like, you know, look, you know, this happens all the time. This is not unique. You know, kids have these memories all the time. And he was giving me a really hard time. But when he went down to visit the Leiningers, I think he had quite a change of heart, because they're so credible, and there's just no way. There really isn't any other explanation for how James could know all this. So what happened at the end of the interview was the doorbell rang, and there was a package from Ann Barron for the Leiningers, and inside the package was a model of a Corsair airplane and a bust of George Washington. And these were the effects that the Navy had sent back to the family after Houston's death. These were things that he had with him, and one of them was the model of a Corsair airplane.
Jeez.
You know, so it's weirder and weirder. I mean, there's so much more detail that I don't even know. They are currently writing a book about James's and their experiences with James's memories.
Well, when they're done and published, you get them back on here with
you. Oh, yeah. Carol. Yeah, so it probably won't be until next year, but I think I know from the feedback we got from that ABC Primetime special, this is going to be the case that I think is going to open a lot of Western minds to this. You know, there are many, many cases in Asia that are even more compelling, but this is the first case that I've had in the United States where
did they ever find the Jack Larson friend?
Yeah. Yeah, he's alive.
Does he think the little boy is?
I don't remember exactly what he said, but some of the other people, you know, they're going, well, you know, they've had their own paranormal experiences, and, you know, there's no way that he could know all these things. And he even knew, like, jargon from the Navy from World War II. I can't remember. There were a few expressions that he came up with. And miraculously, some Japanese television network, I can't remember which one, got hold of the story, and they flew the Leiningers to Japan and had a memorial service where James Houston's plane was shot down.
Jeez. And was the little boy with them?
Oh, yeah. And Bruce said everyone absolutely, you know, the Japanese crew and the family absolutely lost it when little James stood up in the boat and saluted it and said, I'll never forget you.
Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing. I mean, talk about closure. You know, it's uncanny, really. The whole thing is really amazing. And he's an amazing little boy. He's just very bright, aware, alert. You know, there's something special about him, too.
Does he, at his age now, talk about his other life much?
Not as much. I think it's interesting because Andrea would send me drawings that little James would do when he was much younger, and they were always of planes being shot at with flak, you know, just showed airplanes with big dots all over it.
Yeah.
And this went on for years, and after they went to Japan, he drew the front of an airplane and flying over a field of flowers. So we really felt that he had closure.
This has got to be one of the most compelling cases I've heard, Carol.
It's wonderful because there was healing, too, for him. You know, in a very big external way, too, with that trip to Japan. You know, he went back to where he died.
Do they need healing? Is that a reason for reincarnation?
That's a reason why some of the memories come up, because they need healing, yes. Especially with the traumatic deaths like James's in the past life. He was 21 years old.
Never had a chance to say goodbye.
Right. And, you know, there's so much energy that's, you know, so much momentum, and his life was cut short. He never had a chance to say goodbye, as you said. And there's a certain momentum, you know, that he was unfinished. I think he was probably really upset. He was shot down on his last mission. So he comes back. How many years later was that? Between 1945 and 1998. And, you know, he's obsessed with his death. He's obsessed with airplanes. He says he is a pilot. You know, he was telling them, I am a pilot. So there is that, what I call the continuum of consciousness from one life to the next. And children experience that a lot of times. They don't know that they've died.
Is the little James still a kid in that? Does he play kid games and have fun?
Totally a kid.
Okay.
So, you know, there wasn't anything strange about him. It just, the nightmares were out of the ordinary, and, you know, these remarks were out of the ordinary, but he was, you know, very healthy, really well-behaved, wonderful child who just had this really strong interest in airplanes and seemed to know a lot about them.
When a child, Carol, starts to talk about their past life, and it's not under hypnosis,
right?
Do they go into a trance-like state, or are they just the normal kid?
Well, that's a really good question. They're normal, but sometimes they'll get like a faraway look in their eyes as they're remembering. And it's almost like they're in a momentary trance sometimes. You know, sometimes it's just fully integrated into their ordinary consciousness, but sometimes they'll get kind of a faraway look on their face and start talking about it and then just kind of snap back. So it's almost as if you were, I asked you, George, remember when you were 10 years old and your parents took you to the amusement park and you kind of, your eyes might roll back a little bit as you're recollecting that?
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of thing. And these memories just come out spontaneously. Something might trigger them, like, I think when that incident where James said that the Corsair used to get flat tires, I think Andrea may have had a flat tire on her car, and that triggered the memory.
Right.
So a lot of times children get triggered by similar visual cues or a sound. In my son's case, the sound of loud booming sounds reminded him of that battlefield experience. So there are a lot of sensory triggers.
A child ever been reincarnated to the point where he was possessed, that they lost who the little kid might have been?
I have never heard of that, and people keep reminding me of this movie from the 70s called Audrey Rose, and no evidence that that has ever happened as far as I know. It's not like that. It's very well integrated into the present personality, or the phobia is not. You know, that's something kind of unusual, which needs to be worked through.
Well, unlike demons, for example.
No, it's not like that at all.
This is an amazing, I don't know what to say, Carol. I mean, it just sounds too compelling, too real, too accurate.
It's
not
real,
to believe
George.
In it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's real. And, you know, that's what I want people to know. This is real, and there's a lot of evidence for it. Not only my cases, but Dr. Stevenson's and Dr. Jim Tucker at UVA, University of Virginia, who took over Dr. Stevenson's research. You know, the cases are everywhere.
Well, let's look at this approach for just a moment. And this is, it's going to be difficult because we both believe in reincarnation.
Yeah.
But let's assume that this little case, this little boy, it's not real. What could he have done to get all this information? I can't see how he would be able to do it.
Yeah,
maybe he saw a History Channel show on that, but you wouldn't pick up information like that.
A two-year-old is not going to assimilate information like that and integrate it into their personalities quite like that.
And I don't think the parents would drill it into the kid's brain, do you?
Well, Bruce didn't want to have anything to do with it when it started coming up. He didn't want to believe it was reincarnation.
All right, when we come back here, we'll talk a little bit more about past lives. And then next hour, we'll open up the phone lines for questions or perhaps your own past life story. And like I said, next hour, we'll open up the phone lines. Perhaps you want to share one of your past life stories with us as well. Carol Bowman, our guest, will be right back. Carol, just on this planet, 6+ billion people projected to go to 9 billion in 20 to 35 years. Where are these extra 2.5 to 3 million souls going to come from?
I always get that question, George.
Uh-huh.
And my answer is we don't really know what a soul is. I mean, we don't know if we are living existences on other dimensions simultaneously, if souls come from other dimensions to come to Earth. We have no... why do we think there's a one-to-one correspondence? We have no idea. You know, there could be new souls. There really is no way to explain what a soul is or how the energy operates. And my personal feeling is that we do have existences in other dimensions simultaneously.
Maybe they'll come from the Guff, the Hall of Souls.
Sounds good.
You never know.
That's poetic.
What? You know, we don't know what souls are. We don't know if they're regenerated. But I have to believe there are more souls than physical bodies, don't you think?
Probably. I mean, going back to some of the more ancient traditions, they say it's an honor to be born because there's so many souls who want to be born, so that each birth is a privilege. Kind of like that one.
Would you think that a ghost is a soul that hasn't reincarnated yet?
Don't know. It could be an earthbound spirit. It could be a soul who hasn't reincarnated yet. It could be a manifestation of some inner experience. I don't know. But there are, I believe that there are souls who kind of hang around the earth plane for a while after death. And I also believe that when we die, we can see a manifestation of our loved ones if we need to. Even if they've reincarnated, I think a part of them still manifests for us. And, you know, a lot of people are concerned about that when they hear that I've written a book about reincarnation in the same family. They say, well, I don't want my grandmother to come back because when I die, I want to see her. But I believe that the soul is so multidimensional that if we need to see an aspect of that soul, you know, for comfort or for just reconnection, that we will.
It still hangs around in some form or fashion.
In some dimension, yeah. I mean, you know, I think there are beings around us all the time, and some children can see that.
How quickly do you think a soul reincarnates? Almost instantaneously, if there's an available body?
It can. It can be less than 9 months, which I think is a surprise for most people, because I think we're commonly led to believe that the soul connects with the fetus at conception, but that's not necessarily true, because I've had some cases. I had one case of a woman giving birth in a hospital as her grandmother was dying. I think her grandmother died a couple minutes before the birth, and she gave birth to the soul of the grandmother. And in some cultures, the Druze in Lebanon believe that you take your last breath, and your next breath is in a new body. So they believe it's immediate. And I think it varies. I think it can be a second, a minute, 9 months, or 90 years. I don't think they're really...
I guess time doesn't mean anything.
Exactly.
In that state.
Right. I mean, and you know, you could even say, well, maybe, you know, a part of you, you know, as you're dying, has already reincarnated. I don't know. I don't really have all the answers for that one.
Do you find that a child's hobbies and interests may mean what they might have been in the other life?
Absolutely. You know, when a 2 or 3 year old has a particular interest or a particular play activity, a repetitive play activity, it could have something to do with past life skills or abilities.
I don't like clowns. I do not recall.
You're not alone.
I don't recall being frightened by a clown here as a kid. I don't. I just one day I woke up and decided I didn't like clowns. Now, I'm sure Stephen King's book and writing. I think it's It, about that clown that lived in the sewers.
I don't know that story.
You remember that one?
No.
I'm pretty sure that was it. That had something to do with it, but not all of it. Yeah. Is it possible that a clown scared the life out of me in another life?
Or someone in some kind of ritual clothing you know, with face paint or feathers or, you know, something like that. Maybe you were involved in some ritual that wasn't very pleasant.
Maybe I was sacrificed or something.
Perhaps. Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, well, you don't. And that's why adults come to me for regression therapy, because they have specific phobias like that, and we try to find the root of the phobia.
So do you think everybody should undergo a past life hypnotic regression?
No, I don't think some people are not good clients for that or appropriate. It's not appropriate for them. But I work with people who have been in therapy for years and seem to hit a wall. You know, they just can't get to the source of the issue, and a lot of times because it's in a previous life. So it works very well for some people. I've had people who have had, like, lifelong migraines go away after one session. And even with the children's cases, there's a case in my second book of a physician's son who had a tumor in his throat, a thyroglossal duct cyst, which went away. He was scheduled for surgery, and it went away after he started talking about how he had been shot in the neck when he was a soldier and was walking through the cold in the mud.
Jeez.
And the surgeon couldn't understand why the tumor disappeared, because it wasn't the kind of thing that ever went into remission. And then the mother, actually it was a physician's wife, she figured out that maybe it had something to do with him having been shot in a previous life.
Can you explain any of these stories away to anything else other than reincarnation?
Well, if you want to, you could.
Yeah.
But there's so many of them with the same patterns, you know, and that's, I've been sitting with this for 20 years, and other people have been sitting with these cases too. You know, I'm not alone. You know, there are thousands of past life therapists throughout the world who have been working with these cases since the 50s and 60s. And there's Dr. Stevenson's work and Erlander Haraldsson in Iceland. You know, the researchers in India who investigate children's memories. So there are people all over the world doing this research and working, and therapists working with past life memories, and we're all finding similar things, that this kind of therapy can really help people, because a lot of times we bring patterns of behavior or fears or beliefs or guilt with us into this life.
What are some of the tail signs here that you'd recommend parents look for if they think their child might have had this past life?
Well, I think the most obvious is when a child talks about things that they couldn't possibly know about in their 2 or 3 or 4 years of experience, or if a child has a very specific phobia that has nothing to do with present life experience, or a child has recurring nightmares about his plane crashing, or a child talks about, I miss my wife and my children. You know, these are pretty clear signs.
Yeah. That's
or talk about when they died before. That's the giveaway.
Yeah.
You know, when they say, well, when I was here before I died, when my car crashed. Well, yeah, this could be quite literal. So I talk about that a lot in my first book, you know, the signs and the tone of voice when they're very serious. You know, they aren't joking.
Was there something in your work that you, even to this day, Carol, think was probably the most startling, most remarkable, that continues to even baffle you?
Baffle or amaze?
Maybe both.
Okay. Well, just the fact that a child can die and come back to the same parents within a very short period of time. I mean, to me, that is the most profound manifestation of reincarnation, that when a child dies, it's the most horrific loss. You know, it's almost impossible to come to terms with that.
I'm sure it's one of the worst feelings ever.
Oh, yeah. But to know, you know, to experience that soul is reborn to you is, I just, you know, I've heard many mothers describe it, and I think until you go through it, you can't understand how miraculous it is, or how mind-blowing it is that this can happen, because we aren't told that this can happen in this culture. In other cultures, in Asian cultures, where there is a prevalent belief in reincarnation, they actually, and in the Pacific Northwest, in some tribal cultures, they take this for granted. And when a new child is born, sometimes they'll look for birthmarks on the body to see if they correspond to birthmarks or maybe an injury or a surgical scar on the deceased. They actually look for signs to see who this new child might be.
When a soul comes back to its original family, could it be because the bereavement is so large and it hurts so much that they're trying to comfort the family?
That's possible. In fact, when I got to meet Dr. Stevens and I joined him on some field investigations of some of my cases that I presented to him, we visited that family in Chicago I was talking about, yeah, with the little boy who died. And I just had to ask him because, you know, he was a man of science who had been studying this for years and years. And I said, well, what do you think draws a soul back into the same family? And he looked at me and he said, love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's as simple as that. There's that love is a powerful attractor. And I think I've heard stories, too, of, say, a grandparent coming back to be in the family to help out the family in some way. You know, there was a purpose and reason behind the birth, you know, where they came back to be of help.
Maybe to find the box of money in the wall or something.
Yeah, that's happened too.
Yeah.
You know, make great screenplays. So, I think that love is a strong attractor, and I think there's that also that feeling of unfinished business. You know, if there was a case that I had of, many cases, you know, of maybe an adult dying and someone was shot in a robbery and they came back to be with the family again to help out the daughter who became the mother of this child because she was so bereft when her father died. So I think that, you know, there are many different reasons. Each story is unique. But I think that love is a good reason, and I think love, and I think that's what people need to know too, that when someone dies, that love can bring them back. And that's very profound. I mean, to me, that's kind of a benevolent view of the universe too, that it works that way.
It's just that the more and more you hear these cases, Carol, you know, if one is spiritual or if one is a believer in divine power,
right,
you have to believe it after you hear these stories.
Yeah, and I do. And you know, you brought up that question of evil. I don't really have an answer for that, but I know that I think a soul can get stuck in that pattern until they wake up. And I had, with my adult cases, I had the most remarkable case of a woman who was terribly, terribly abused as a child. One of the worst childhoods I've ever heard, and I've heard of many. You know, I've worked with thousands of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she wondered why. And we did a past life regression, and she saw that she was an SS stormtrooper in World War II. And at some point, he had a change of heart and realized what he was doing was wrong. And you just can't get out of that. You know, that's your, you know, you're in. You can't just walk away from that. And as he did something purposely to have his fellow SS kill him because he couldn't stand the guilt any longer. And during the regression, he said, I deserve to be punished for what I did. And that was the way that soul turned it around. But once my client saw that this was true, an incredible weight was lifted from her, and she felt that she could let go of that guilt, that she had balanced whatever she needed to balance, and she could move on with her life. And she was really transformed by that understanding.
Have you ever had anybody in a past life regression talk about the other side or what's over there while they were in their soul state?
Almost always in every regression, you go through... it's almost like a virtual near-death experience, and you go into an altered state within an altered state, and you experience yourself as soul consciousness, as that timeless essence. And I think that's the most transformative part of the whole process, because you're in that energy, and you kind of have an overview the personality drops away. All personality drops away, and you're just in that oneness, in that light, and it's very powerful. And I think it's really kind of a virtual death experience. I think something like that, very similar, happens when we leave our bodies.
Have you ever had a case where someone talked about being an extraterrestrial from someplace else?
Yeah.
You have?
Oh, yeah.
All right, give us one.
Well, I'd love to give you details on that, but I can't. But but it was a very interesting. Well, this person actually with a very responsible job in the government.
Well, I don't want their names.
No, I know, but it was very interesting.
I don't want Mr. Cheney's name.
No, didn't work with him.
No, I don't think so.
No, I think he's got a lot of learning to do.
He's got many reincarnated lives.
Yeah, he's got a lot to learn. No, but this is actually a very wonderful person, and they did remember being in another dimension, planet, whatever you want to call it.
What did they describe?
I can't remember the details, but it was a choice to come here. I do remember that, and he is helping out right now. And I know that occasionally I'll get an email from a parent asking, you know, have you ever heard of a child talking about being on another planet? And I have a few of those. And there's a woman in California, Barbara Lamb, who actually chronicles some of those cases. I don't know if she's ever been on your show.
I think she was on a long time ago.
Yeah, but she was kind of specializing in that. And my feeling is it's hard enough to convince people that we have other terrestrial lives, you know, let alone in other dimensions or other planets.
The fact, though, that you don't get a lot of them, what does that tell you?
It tells me that people are afraid to talk about it.
So you think there's more?
Probably.
Do you think, then, that the pool of souls is universal opposed to earthbound?
Oh, definitely.
I said before,
I think, you know, our understanding of the soul is so limited.
What about animals?
What about them?
Do they have souls?
I think some of them do. I mean, I've heard of a lot of cases of educated people who tell me that they believe their dog is the reincarnation of another dog they had.
All right, but is a dog, a reincarnated dog, ever a person from a prior life? Can you come back as a dog?
I think it's possible. I think it's kind of hard to prove.
Or a mosquito or anything like that?
I don't know. You know,
there's got to be a level somewhere that, you know, is a soul cut off, I would think.
I would think, but I don't know. I mean, we're all the same energy, so I don't know. You know, I think probably higher mammals. You know, we could reincarnate as higher mammals, but I don't even go there because, you know, how do you prove that? I don't know. But, you know, in some cultures, they do believe that. And one interesting phenomenon that I've seen in my adult regression practices, especially early on when I started practicing about 20 years ago, when people remembered being Native Americans, when they left the body, they would join the body of an eagle or a soaring bird, go to the spirit world, and it kept happening again and again and again. And I thought that was really interesting. So I think maybe our beliefs or our cultures have something to do with what happens after we die and how we reincarnate too.
Carol, we're going to take phone calls with you and also share some other reincarnation stories when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.